Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Jon Lovett.
I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
I'm Trey Val Anderson.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
And we're here at the SiriusXM studios in Hollywood with a live audience. There it is.
Nice.
So spirited. Yes.
For our annual What a Year special, we are happy to have Travel and Priyanka with us, two of the co-hosts of What a Day.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you guys.
It's very legit in here.
It is legit.
It is real
That's
legit.
What we like to think. This is, we come here when it's time to do something legit.
We come here for magic.
We'll also be talking to Katie Porter later. And we are also taking a look back on the year in politics. We're going to share our New Year's resolutions and present our annual pundies for the absolute worst takes of 2022. But first, if you are looking for somewhere to donate this holiday season, we have a wonderful organization for you. World Central Kitchen is a nonprofit founded by Chef Jose Andres that feeds people experiencing humanitarian crises all over the world. They've probably fed more people in Ukraine this year than most governments and relief organizations. It's a fantastic organization. To make a donation, you can visit wck.org. So please go donate. All right, let's start with a look back at 2022. Lots of news, lots of politics, lots of elections, but most of all, lots of takes. Some good, most bad. To get the conversation started, our producers have filled this box next to Dan that you cannot see because it's an audio medium with some of the hottest, most debatable, and potentially most annoying takes of the year. Each of us will take turns picking one out, at which point we'll go around and say whether we agree or disagree and why. Healthy debate is encouraged. But civility is key.
Yeah, required. Yeah.
Civility is required. Dan, why don't you kick us off?
All right. We're reaching into this magical box. The first take is a different state other than South Carolina should go first in the Democrats' nominating calendar. And if you agree, which one?
Ooh. Oh, I agree with that. Oh, wait, Dan, you're supposed to go first. Yeah. Sorry, I got excited.
Literally just practiced this 10 minutes ago.
Well, just sitting there. Jump in.
I am fine with South Carolina. South Carolina's
fine.
A game.
Yes. Oh, wow. He's fine.
What? They got the DNC poobahs got to you, too. Dan also rigged Iowa.
Also, I'm here to announce I'm investing in an ABC affiliate in South Carolina.
Yeah.
That's it? You're just okay?
I'm
anyone else?
South
What does everyone else think about South Carolina?
I'm not going to lie. I don't care. Respectfully. Respectfully.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bad idea. I'm not convinced it's a good idea, but I'm not convinced it's a bad idea either.
I was persuaded by Faz Zabed in the New York Times that basically said South Carolina is not a state Democrats are going to compete in the general election. That we should focus on states we can compete in and win if we're going to put a bunch of money into those places. And I thought the idea of going to North Carolina made a little bit more sense. But like Trey Vell said, I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
You know, I also am from South Carolina. So why not? Why they can't be first for once?
You're from South Carolina. You don't have a stronger feeling?
Hey.
Listen.
First in some pretty gruesome education statistics.
Absolutely. Well, normally we would say that's last. But, you know. So, but yes.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this, but the People of South Carolina were pretty surprised that they got chosen to go first.
I know someone who wasn't.
Yeah, right.
Jim Clyburn.
Of course. Nevada put in a bid to be first. I kind of think Nevada would have been a good first state.
Oh, how great would that have been? Oh, I guess we have to go back to Vegas.
I know. This is what I'm saying. But I think it's got a good... I mean, I think Nevada is one of those states where, because it's such a competitive general election state, having a bunch of Democrats run around there campaigning in a primary would only help the infrastructure there. And I think you have a heavily Latino population there. You have a heavily non-college educated population there, which both voters that Democrats need in the general election. So I think there's a good argument for Nevada.
The good news is we're still going to go to Nevada early.
Right.
And it is the official Crooked Media position that Nevada is the most important state and the one that requires the most time and attention.
From us.
From us.
From us. We have a specific... Yeah, we can help.
We were campaigning for Dina Titus, and she was like, thank you so much for coming here. It's like, it's a good idea for you to be in Las Vegas, because that's why we care about your race the most. And I'm still drunk, by the way, Dina.
All right, that we did that one. Trevelle, you're next.
All righty, let's see what y'all got going on. In 2022, Democrats meddled in Republican primaries to boost MAGA candidates. It's a strategy that worked, and we should do it again in 2024. I would say that I would like people to stop playing games and to, because we ain't got to do all this complex strategy stuff. Don't be trying to, play games behind the scene because you think it's working, right? Because then what if it don't work, right?
Right.
And I would say that it didn't work. Like, there were just so many other things happening right now that were just, like, overpowering. And so it looks like it worked. But I don't think it worked for real, for real.
I think it worked. Not high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
I think it worked. Yeah. Every candidate that the Democrats meddled to elevate lost, and lost pretty big, because they were fucking nuts.
Yeah, I would also say when Democrats like meddle, it's like they lightly suggest Republicans vote for someone heinous and they wholeheartedly agree. And so it's like not like Democrats are going door to door putting guns to MAGA voters' heads. Like, they're pointing out that a Republican at one point accidentally did something reasonable, and all of these Republican primary voters are being like, well, that's unacceptable to me. Yeah. So, and like the lotto, you can't win if you don't play,
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a high risk. Like, you end up with someone really shitty if it backfires, but like very high reward.
I mean, we got somebody real shitty and we're all dealing with it.
Who?
Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which one?
It's early in the show to go after Biden like that. Here's my take on this. I think there is no question that the more MAGA the candidate, the more likely they are to lose. I am not persuaded that any of the meddling that we did is why these candidates won the primary. The reason they won the primaries is because Republican primary voters want MAGA candidates. And I don't know why we think this is the one time Democratic ads were super persuasive that they got these Republicans to do this.
Yeah.
That's a good point,
That's
too.
Fair. Yeah.
If we can control both the Republican and the Democratic primaries, then we'd
probably control the House.
All right, Priyanka.
All right, next
it's
one.
It's all you.
Let's see. Oh, God. Woke is broke.
Wow, I didn't know you thought that.
Tweet this out.
We're going to clip Priyanka just saying woke is broke.
God. Yeah, you're not going to do it to Katie Porter. We're going to do it to me. Thanks. Yeah, I'm going to say no. I don't agree with that. I don't. I think that's a bad thing.
Anyone want to talk about woke is broke?
Yeah, anybody want to play the counter on that?
I mean, I think that if you wanted to actually analyze that the silly woke is broke comment that Trump makes all the time, which is why we had it in there, I think that there was a lot of noise made about like Democrats being too woke, culture wars. I think when you drill down in all of the data in the midterms, like, these issues just didn't sway people either way. Like, I think that people voted Republican primarily either because they were pissed about inflation or because they were hardcore Republicans anyway, or because, I don't know, those were the top two issues. Those are the top reasons that people voted Republican. And the idea that, like, these a lot of these culture war issues, they just didn't register that high on people's list of concerns when they actually went out to vote in the midterms.
Yeah, there was an example that sticks with me. I think it was in the Times where in one of the focus groups or some independent voter was asked about some ad that a Republican was running in Michigan that attacked trans people around bathrooms. And the person that was asked about it laughed because it just wasn't an issue they cared about. We talk a lot about the information bubble that progressives are in. And I think the reason that gets covered more is because journalists are in here with us. But I do think there's about to be a big conversation about the Republican bubble that they're in, and the conversations that they're having that make no sense outside of the bounds of the their like kind of little cloistered world. Like every Republican pundit has spent the last 2 weeks thinking that Elon Musk has exposed basically like a national treasure book of secrets worth of like magical information from deep within the bowels of Twitter emails when no one gives a fuck about what they're talking about, and it barely makes sense outside of this language that they've developed. So like, yeah, I don't think woke is broke.
Well, yeah.
That's the point that I'm making.
When I
that wasn't clear. To be clear.
It stuck with me when I started talking to these Biden voters who voted for Republican Glenn Youngkin in Virginia for governor. And obviously he like spent most of that campaign saying he's going to like, you know, get critical race theory out of our schools and blah, blah, blah. And so I asked them, is that one of the reasons why? And almost every single, actually every single Biden voter who voted for Glenn Youngkin said, oh, I actually completely disagree with him on the critical race theory thing and his education platform. I just voted him for him because didn't like Terry McAuliffe, was pissed about some grocery tax, whatever else. Like, so it not only didn't work, it was like they actually, people who voted for these Republicans who were talking about woke is broke actually didn't agree with them, at least in that case. Love it.
We should no longer refer to Donald Trump as the presumptive frontrunner for the 2024 Republican nomination.
This is a tough one.
I didn't know we had a formal ceremony where we decided, like, we stripped the title of presumptive.
Right here. This is it. This is the ceremony.
There's a real language problem with this entire question.
Yeah.
Because if you're calling him the frontrunner, you're presuming he's the frontrunner, and therefore he's a presumptive frontrunner. And so...
Yeah, presumptive. You usually use presumptive with nominee. So so we're getting tripped up on a word here.
Yeah, let's start. Let me start.
Is he the frontrunner?
Yes. Donald Trump remains the frontrunner for the Republican nomination. There's been some ebbing in the polls, but he's obviously... And by the way, like, of course he is. Like, the only question is whether there can be somebody that pretends to be Trump enough without the baggage that Trump has in order to defeat Trump. I do not, like, look, we'll see what happens. Like, there's polls out in the last couple of days that show Ron DeSantis beating Donald Trump. But let's see, 2 weeks of them having a conversation in public and Ron DeSantis' lack of personality. And we're back in the 2016 situation where everyone's like, oh, no, it's going to be Jeb Bush. Don't worry. These polls are stupid.
Anyone think he's not the frontrunner?
No, he's the frontrunner.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two ways to look at being frontrunner. There is the person who leads in the polls early, which is a bad way of thinking about the frontrunner, because otherwise we'd have President Jeb Bush, President Joe Lieberman, President Rudy Giuliani, all those people.
President Herman Cain.
Yikes.
Yeah. President, what's that? What's that one with the gay husband?
Michelle
Bachmann. Oh, I mean, husband. I said a husband. The one that married woman from Minnesota.
But you, I mean,
DeSantis in the middle.
Ron DeSantis is basically just an idea right now. He has not spoken to a person. He may have no personality. He may have no charisma. We don't know if he can take a punch. There's all sorts of, I mean, Donald Trump, if you bet your life on the Republican nominee right now, you had to pick one of those two people, you would be foolish not to pick Trump, I think.
I have delighted in calling Donald Trump the Republican frontrunner. I do it every time we record one of these podcasts. I will say, though, that like last couple of weeks, like if you just look at if you went by the polling average right now, I think he's not. I think it's DeSantis. There's now been three polls that show DeSantis ahead, plus a lot of polls in the states. There's maybe like one or two polls that show Trump ahead. I agree that polls are not the only indicator of this. You have to look at everything else.
And he's also had a,
and like
a
you said, they haven't sort of clashed out loud yet.
I do think like Donald Trump has had among the worst couple of weeks he's ever had in public life.
And that includes when he incited a violent insurrection.
Yeah, it includes everything. And so let's see what happens when people forget, because people have a good habit of forgetting what Donald Trump says and does.
Yeah. All right, we're still calling him frontrunner. We've decided. Yeah,
for now.
All right, I got a take. The 2022 Congress has proven that bipartisanship is alive and well.
Say it's wrong. Say it's wrong.
I mean, it's not technically wrong.
Oh, my God. No labels over here.
I was talking to my friend Kirsten Cinema the other day. On Joe Manchin's boat. Yeah. And we were having this conversation. I mean, look.
Problem Solvers Caucus member.
Gottheimer protege. Yeah.
Infrastructure bill. The COVID relief bill. The gay marriage and interracial marriage protection bill that just passed last week. What else? There's a couple other ones. Electoral Count Reform Act might get done. We're recording this a little bit early, so we don't know. There's been, I mean, there has legitimately been a bunch of bipartisan.
The CHIPS Act. Don't forget the CHIPS Act.
The CHIPS Act. Which, can anyone tell us what the CHIPS Act is? Something about semiconductors in China?
It's very important.
It's important.
It's really good.
Yeah, we're happy. We're very happy.
I feel like you made the case for Alive, but like, are we going to say well? Like,
oh, that's good.
You want to hang on well?
Yeah, I don't think it's well.
I think it was alive and well in 2022. I do not think it is alive and well in this next Congress.
Right. Well, that's not the fucking take, Dan. Well, it's just 2022 Congress.
I'm taking it and spinning it forward.
You want another one? Do we have time for more?
I mean, you have the watch.
All right, let's go. I don't know. It's four. Yeah, we have a little
time.
You have the watch. We're on a roll.
Despite all of our worries about Republican voter suppression efforts in Georgia, it did not work, as evidenced by Senator Warnock's win.
Lies.
That's a bad take.
That's a bad take.
Winning in spite of voter suppression does not mean voter suppression didn't happen.
Yeah, there were long lines.
Yeah, like let's say Kemp put 6-foot walls around every ballot booth in the state, and then we gave everybody ladders. We wouldn't be like, the walls weren't a big deal. We should probably leave them up.
That's good.
Absolutely.
Travell?
It worked, but we worked harder. Here we go. If the Democratic Party had doled out their money more wisely, they could have held the House.
That's an interesting one.
If they had doled it out in bribes to the New York Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Love that edit.
That's a really good idea, Dan.
Don't tell Letitia James.
That's a message box waiting to happen.
What do you think? Is it a money situation?
I mean, I think right. What do they say? This little saying is, hindsight is 20/20. I think there are examples where you could have took a little money from this place and put it over here, right? I think there are those examples, but I don't know if I would say it was like a universal like y'all did it wrong thing.
I would say that would be a better slip after we dumped millions of dollars into a South Carolina Senate race that we lost by, 10%, by a Kentucky race with Amy McGrath. Like, I think we did not invest as foolishly as we have in the past. But there's always a kind of, like, there was a bunch of money that went into, like, the Marjorie Taylor Greene race. That's just, like, there's always a problem where there are kind of celebrity races or, like, just places where some money goes that we better spent elsewhere, but I don't know that you can say more than that.
Yeah.
Dan, did you validate what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think, yes, there are places that got a ton of money that never should have gotten money, and that's a problem with a lot of grifters in the party pushing those things. Yeah. We had a lot of that in 2020, some of that this time around. I don't, like, you can probably find a handful of races where if we had invested a little more money, we might have gotten over the top. Probably the most notable one would be the Lauren Boebert race in Colorado. But Boebert,
like she's from fucking Paris.
It's
Boebert. Her name is fucking
like,
Boebert. She has a gun themed restaurant. Her name is Boebert.
You want her to lose in that Republican plus 12 district? Call her French. But I don't see those races we lost in New York are not for lack of money. Sean Patrick Maloney, the chair of the DCCC, did not lose his race because he didn't have enough money.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm still getting fundraising emails from that guy. Stop.
All right, Priyanka.
All right. Democrats successfully made democracy a winning issue in 2022. Ooh. I don't know if I would say, like, I mean,
You know what you really want to say, but you don't know if you can say it.
What? I actually don't know what Dan means. I would say, what's your take?
I think it certainly made it. They made it an issue for people who, like, probably voters who probably never would have thought to care about it. Was it necessarily what pushed them over the top? I don't know, but I do think like people showed up to the polls and cared about democracy in a way where, like, I don't know, in 2015, not 2015, because what elections were there in 2015, before, that they probably would not have showed up and cared so much about.
Yeah, I would say Republicans successfully made democracy an issue in the 2022 midterms.
I think it was Democrats highlighting Republican extremism, which included running a bunch of election deniers, which has to do with democracy,
sure. But
also their position on abortion, which was extreme in most cases as well. So I do think it's like, I think extremism probably was the bigger factor than sort of democracy as an abstract concept.
It was a proof point.
I guess also like race by race, though, like when you're thinking of like Secretary of State races, like that's a much bigger issue for people who care about that. So yeah, I will.
That is true.
I was focusing on winning. So in those races, yes.
Well, and the good point on those races is the Secretary of State candidates where there were election deniers on the Republican side and Democrats running, the Democrats ran way ahead of even the other Democrats on the ticket.
Totally.
Statewide. So
yeah.
it did happen. What did you think, Priyanka, wanted to say?
I don't think Democrats made democracy a winning issue. I think that is a story we want to tell ourselves to make ourselves feel better, to confirm our own biases about what people should care about.
Yeah.
And there's very little evidence, I think, that democracy and protecting democracy drove votes. It was in almost no ads. No one voter, like candidates, did not communicate it. People cared about extremism and their freedoms and the threats of these extremist candidates to their freedoms. I think there are some exceptions in the Secretary of State election overseers, because that is a very specific thing. That's sort of like someone running to be state treasurer who doesn't believe in math. Like you're gonna be able to make that case.
Right.
But I think there's a real danger that if we tell ourselves that democracy is safe because there's a majority that cares about democracy as a driving issue.
Everyone heard the Star-Spangled banner in their head when they
heard that. I think we'll be learning the wrong lessons and we will have the wrong messages in 2024.
Yeah,
that's the case.
I think
that's good.
Let's see what we got. More than any other demographic group, Gen Z is the reason there was no red wave. Disagree. Sorry, Gen Z. That is not borne out by the facts. Wish it were, hope it would be, isn't the case. Now, I feel like there's an important distinction that is not being made enough. Did Gen Z help make the difference in preventing Republicans from winning some Senate races, from winning a bigger House majority? Absolutely. Is that by dint of Gen Z showing up in any kind of spectacular way? No. Is that because a lot of Gen Z did something that required nothing of them, which is getting older? Yes. We need to draw a distinction between just the fact that something that will continue to help us is that people get old and die and young people age into the voting population. In the same way Dan is saying we shouldn't delude ourselves into believing people voted democracy, we shouldn't delude ourselves into believing we had an incredible success with Gen Z. I'm not saying that to denigrate Gen Z. I'm saying that because we have to do a lot more work to get more of Gen Z to turn out. Because if you actually look at the numbers, what probably made the biggest difference is the fact that millennials who were became Democrats under Obama, then got like a Donald Trump booster shot, are showing up in ways that previous generations wouldn't.
Yeah, I got some millennials out there.
Hey, yeah. where are my millennials at? Huh? Hey, you guys see girls? And we have to do more work to get Gen Z to turn up. Do not believe that Gen Z did something amazing or unprecedented. They didn't. They're not showing up as much as they could.
So 2010 and 2014, 18 to 29-year-olds, they weren't Gen Z then, but 18 to 29-year-olds in those two elections did not show up in big numbers, and the margin wasn't great. 2018, that was the best year for 18 to 29, right? That was the best midterm in the last, I don't know, 50 years. So in 2022, Gen Z did not turn out at the rates that they did in 2018, and the margin was slightly worse than it was in 2018 as well. So if you just go midterm to midterm, they did a little bit worse.
I like the fact that at any one time, there's like 4 to 5 generations living in America, and Lovett's currently at war with 2 of them.
No. I cannot do that.
Don't have him go off on the Gen Xers.
Like the Defense Department does the Quinquennial Defense Review, where they have to be able to defeat one army and hold off another. I cannot declare war on 2 generations at once. I don't have the power. I won't be able to sustain it.
All right, I'll do the last take. Did you want to say one more thing?
I'll just say one thing.
One more negative thing about Gen Z.
Yeah.
About an entire generation of people.
I will say this. Gen X's decision to make their whole personality whatever did not serve them well in terms of not ever having electoral politically, like getting elected anywhere at any time yes. or really being involved.
As a spokesperson for Gen X, I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I blame singles.
Yeah. Wasn't good.
All right, last take. Joe Biden's ultra MAGA was ultimately a winning message in 2022. Look, the words ultra MAGA, I think if you polled a bunch of people, I don't know if anyone would have known that he said that.
Yeah, what are we talking about?
I don't know.
I think Joe Biden's effort to highlight Republican extremism, which he carried through most of 2022 and most other Democrats did, I do think that was a winning message to Dan's point. I don't know if ultra MAGA was. I do think there was like MAGA specifically labeling Republicans who were Trump supporters MAGA Republicans. It was borne out by the research that actually did have an effect on people, that when you labeled them MAGA Republicans, they had less of a favorable view towards them. So I do think that helped. Anyone want to disagree? No.
Okay. No, I think that's right.
All right. Now it's time to recognize some of the year's worst takes with our very first Pundi Award of the evening. Exciting. Ooh. Exciting. So the category is Worst 2022 Midterm Prediction, and here to present is none other than Crooked's Chief Take Officer, Elijah Cohn. Elijah, take it away. Elijah does have a tux on.
For those listening at home, he did do
from
a
the overwhelming majority do of you.
do a jump scare of wearing a tux.
This is my Oscars, folks. All right. I'm so excited to present to you our first Pundi of the night. Here are the nominees for Worst 2022 Midterm Prediction. Loaded field, guys. Nominee number one, Clay Travis, who is Giancarlo and my former coworker from Fox Sports. On September 14th, Clay Travis wrote, Carrie Lake is now favored in gambling odds to be elected governor of Arizona for the first time in her campaign. I told y'all my underdog parlay of Carrie Lake, Herschel Walker, and Dr. Oz was going to hit. All three are going to win.
Yeah, he didn't get the exact box on that one.
Next up, we have Josh Holmes, a Republican podcaster. On November 9th, John Ralston from Nevada shared a ballot dump that led Holmes to write the following. Barring something statistically unforeseeable, it's all over but the crying here. Laxalt is going to win this. Tough for our friend Josh Holmes. Next up, we have Elon Musk. In June, Elon Musk shared that he was voting Republican for the first time and predicted, quote, massive red wave in 2022. That did not happen, and it actually came out today that as of this recording, there is no evidence that Elon actually voted in November.
That's true.
Love that.
That's true.
And finally, we have Hotline Josh Crash Hour, who wrote a big midterm preview for Axios on November 2nd. Josh wrote, extreme or unprepared Republican nominees may not be as big a liability as they once seemed. With the growing possibility of a red wave, it's possible some flawed MAGA-aligned candidates could win despite their political struggles. Keep a close eye on Blake Masters in Arizona and Don Balduk in New Hampshire. And those are your nominees for Worst 2022 Midterm Prediction.
I don't know if I should clap for those.
I want to start by saying this. I don't begrudge anyone making outlandish predictions.
Okay.
Anybody willing
okay.
to kind of put on the overalls and get their pick and go down into the fucking prediction mines to somebody I respect. We stopped doing it because we were bad at it.
That's why we get to mock them now.
I understand that.
We did. This is the whole reason we did that.
I know, but it's there but for the grace, you know? Keep going.
You started off, and I thought Clay Travis has this, but Hotline Josh, that was pretty broad.
I would say
this, sweeping.
I think what Holmes did is actually very impressive, because it's rare to incorrectly predict the outcome of an election after the election. You know, that's harder to do.
Yeah, and he's like supposed to be a data guy too, so he should have known.
Look, he is a man who has made himself quite wealthy based on the credential of reelecting Mitch McConnell in the most Republican state in the country. So who are we to doubt his genius?
Yeah. I don't know. No one's saying Elon, but like, isn't it kind of fun to hear Elon sound so fucking dumb?
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
I don't know.
That was pretty dumb.
little detail about that Elon thing is on that same thread, he went on to say, I'm thinking of creating a moderate super PAC that supports candidates with centrist views from all parties. Just a fun little detail.
They were all wrong. They were all kind of equally wrong. Mm-hmm. Clay Travis is kind of like a C-list sports commentator.
Yeah.
I think we should talk more about political gambling one day. But so what does he really know? Axios Josh or Hotline Josh or Defunct Publication Josh, whatever it is we call him. He's really only reporting what people are telling him. Mm. And now it obviously confirms with his deeply held views that Republicans always win elections. But a lot of other reporters also said that. And Democrats, a lot of Democratic operatives and pollsters told people the same thing.
Dan's zeroing in on Josh Holmes.
On Josh Holmes. Sure. That's his job. His job, he gets paid to tell people who is going to win and lose. And
he gets paid to spend super PAC money.
He got all of them wrong. Because you had to pick from a plethora of Josh Holmes takes. He said the same thing about Dr. Oz. He said the same thing about Blake Master. He said the same thing about Carrie Lake. All across the board, he was wrong. And
I'm
so
persuaded.
I think he wins the pundit.
You know, I'm persuaded.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I just want to say that, like, that doesn't mean that Josh Holmes isn't really good at his job and should continue to be supported in his work because he's doing such a good job.
Keep hiring Josh Holmes. Josh Holmes.
That's our winner.
I don't know if Elijah does anything. Do you have an award? No?
There'll be a post-pod trophy ceremony.
Thank God.
Yeah, great.
Okay,
something?
Thank you, Elijah. All right. When we come back, we will face off in the ultimate game of 2022 trivia. Okay, we're back, and we're ready to test how much we remember about whatever happened in 2022. Travel and Priyanka are sticking around to play. Love it. Take it away.
As 2022 draws to a close, it seems important to pay homage to all the news our brains have already begun shoveling out to make room for 2023. Remember West Elm, Caleb? Doja Cat bringing back the Mexican pizza? That time Adam Levine asked his mistress if he could name his unborn child after her? I sure don't.
How can we forget?
And you probably don't either, but we're about to prove it definitively with a 2022 review game we're calling Mamma Mia, Year We Go Again. A trip down memory hole lane. Sure. Why not? As a warning, this is a drinking game, so get your question wrong. You are ethically obligated to drink. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're ready.
Priyanka and John are going to play against Travel and Dan. John and Priyanka, here we go. Who is this woman and why do you know her?
What's her name? Scarlett. Julia Fox? Julia Fox. Oh.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's really
the muse. I mean, I was Josh Safdie's muse when he wrote Uncut Gems.
Right.
Uncut Gems.
Did we have to say that part?
No, you're good.
Oh, good.
Okay.
You got it.
Perfect.
What was that?
Is there no dings?
Oh, if they don't know who that is, I feel like we were the underdogs going in.
Travel and Dan.
I don't think you're the underdogs.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think you're the underdogs.
You are Bravo. And
I think Travel's basically alone in this.
Yeah. Oh,
no. Well, hopefully we don't get what y'all just showed because I don't know who that was. I never seen that a day in my life. I don't think that crossed the racial barrier onto my side of the internet. I don't know. I'm just saying. I've never seen. Okay, keep going.
What musical performance did Matt Walsh say was desecrating American history just for the sake of it?
Wow.
Was it Lizzo?
Oh, yeah. Yes. With the whatchamacallit.
With the flute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whose flute? You got to get it. You got to tell me whose flute. It was who you're pointing at. Who are you pointing toward the past at? Who are you pointing back in time at? You got to get who the flute is. You got to get it.
Oh, you have to get who the flute is?
If you guys can steal it, if you know who the flute is.
James Madison.
Boom.
Sorry.
Was it James Madison or Dolly Madison's flute?
It was James Madison's crystal flute.
James Madison.
Back over to Priyanka and John. At the 2022 Oscars, what movie swept Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Picture?
Well, that's a Travel question.
Wait.
You got it? What? You don't have to whisper.
Maybe. I don't know. I have no idea.
What do you want to guess? Gotta give
Do
me
you
want
to put it in?
Throw it in.
What was it called?
Oh, it was called King Richard.
Oh, was it King Richard?
No.
Go.
It was Coda.
You got it.
Oh,
I never would have guessed that.
Coda.
I was going to say Top Gun Maverick.
That's this year.
That'll be for this year. Top Gun Maverick is going to be the best picture this year. All right, Trevelle and Dan, what was the absolutely adorable child describing in a song that went crazy on TikTok in August with the lyrics, "It's a big lump with noms. It has the juice. I can't imagine a more beautiful thing."
Corn.
It was. It was corn.
You lost me at TikTok.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that.
Dan,
wild. I had no idea.
Okay, all right. I just want to understand how broken my brain is. If you knew it was corn, raise your hand.
Wow,
see what's happening? That's it.
If you didn't, be honest.
I don't. I mean,
he's got a Jordan. Chipotle commercial and everything.
Ben, what's your excuse? I know Ben's excuse. What's your excuse? All right, let's keep going. Who got that right?
I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
John and Priyanka, which one of these was not a disgusting viral TikTok food trend from 2022? Which was not a trend? A, pink sauce. B, healthy Pepsi. C, chicken and grapes. D, butterboards. Which one was not a trend?
Okay, butterboards definitely were a thing.
Is that a thing?
I think. I haven't heard of it, so okay. Oh. We'll just.
Did you know the other ones?
Healthy Pepsi sounds crazy. And then what was the third one?
It was chicken and grapes.
Chicken and grapes.
It was chicken and grapes.
I feel like chicken and grapes could be one. Healthy Pepsi, like who?
I'm going to need an answer.
Yeah.
Healthy Pepsi.
Nope, that happened.
What?
And it was a segment on Loli. Thanks for listening.
Do you have any idea?
The answer.
Hey,
wait.
Do we get to guess?
Yeah,
do
you
we
can
get
guess.
The steal?
Is it chicken and grapes?
You got it.
Oh.
Trevelle and Dan, which one of these was not an actual bit of drama that emerged from this year's eternal Don't Worry, Darling press cycle?
Oh.
Okay. Which one of these was not a bit of drama? A, Olivia Wilde allegedly made her special salad dressing for Harry Styles a clear sign of seduction that resulted in a fight with then-husband Jason Sudeikis. B, Shia LaBeouf was replaced by Harry Styles. How do you say it? He revealed the film's original twist ending that the entire movie takes place in Florence Pugh's pew-pew-pew coma dream. C, Olivia Wilde and Florence Pugh allegedly bumped heads on set over Wilde's directorial style. Or D, Harry Styles appeared to spit in Chris Pine's lap. E, Jason Sudeikis allegedly laid down in front of Olivia Wilde's car to prevent her from leaving him for, you guessed it, Harry Styles. Which one?
Is all the above an option?
No.
Okay.
One of them
That's
isn't
a lot
real.
Of options.
Yeah,
one
seriously.
Of them isn't real. And I did drop one on the floor, so they will not be repeated.
Choose a letter.
I don't even remember which was which. Is it? It's not. Is it the Shia LaBeouf thing? Is that real?
You know,
I mean, the salad, or is it the salad dressing? Salad dressing.
The salad dressing thing sounded real. Bonkers. Right, but you know, I'm gonna lean on you because I think you will know better than I.
All right, okay.
These ain't my people.
Let's go with the salad dressing.
No.
Shia LaBeouf. No.
Wait, what did they guess?
Oh, they were so disappointed in us.
We think it's the Jason Sudeikis lying in front of the car.
No, that happened.
What?
It's the direction.
No, it's the Shia LaBeouf one. Shia LaBeouf was fired, but not for not telling the ending.
That's sort of.
You got it. All right.
I
pick it up with the judges.
Technicality.
Yeah. I'm giving it to no one.
Wow, that's tough for Jason Sudeikis.
John and Priyanka, please name three items from Dr. Oz's crudité platter.
Oh,
my God.
Guacamole.
Guacamole.
That's one.
Asparagus.
That's two.
And
was it like a full-length carrot, like not a baby
carrot?
I think they had a full...
Ooh. You got it.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, asparagus, broccoli, carrots, pre-made guacamole, salsa, and or tequila.
Salsa.
Disgusting. Trevelle and Dan, which of the following statements made on Twitter did not cause an unstoppable explosion of discourse and rage? A, writers should read. B, I like drinking coffee with my husband. C, I might make my neighbors chili. Or D, all of the above.
D, all of the above.
That's correct. They all did. Those are all things that made people upset.
Choices.
I mean, there's so much discourse about this. I've literally texted with Jon Favreau about all of these in the last 48 hours.
I did a whole interview about an offline about this topic today.
And you can all listen to that when that comes out. And we all know when offline comes out.
The healthy Pepsi segment. Remember that.
All right. Travell and Dan. This celebrity worm costume mulched every other Halloween costume this year. Who is this? This is a celebrity inside of that worm. Dan Travell, who is it?
Let me have it.
I think it's Heidi Klum.
Go.
Heidi Klum.
You bet.
Yes.
Isn't that wild?
On there?
Great job. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that wild?
She always does the most for Halloween.
That's cool. That's a really good one, though.
Mm-hmm.
Was it? Like, how did she even stand? Like, what do you do with when you get to the party?
You do the press and then you go home. All right, Priyanka, John, which one of the Try Guys cheated and was essentially exiled from society?
Fuck.
Specifically the part of society where he was a Try Guy. Zach, Eugene, Keith, or Ned?
Ned. It was Ned. Ned.
It was this person named Ned.
Yes, I was going to say an Ned.
It was
That's
a man
good.
Named right. Ned. Now he's a bi guy. Like, goodbye guy.
Yeah, no, I know.
Not bisexual. He might be, but that's not what I meant. Final question for Travell and Dan. 2022 opened with the emergence of a new star, a non-binary comedian unleashed into the And Just Like That universe to bust up Miranda's marriage and ask the world, what is a comedy concert? I ask you, what is that character's name?
Che.
Che what?
Okay, come on now.
Got to know the full name.
Can there, I steal that. It?
Is it like, I don't want to, is it Diaz?
Sure.
Che Diaz.
Correct. I have to say, I think you all did really well.
But?
No, it's a tie. You both won. I'm going to call it a tie.
Really?
But I'm going to give it to Travell and Dan.
Travell
and Dan.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Because
he attacked the notion of a tie.
Thank you so much.
Attacked the notion of a tie.
Priyanka really carried us, I will say.
She did.
Thank you.
No, but you got me on the ones that I was like, yeah, you know. What are we talking about?
Oh, thanks for playing.
Thank you.
We're a good team. We're a good team.
All right. It's time for our next pundi. And to present the award for Worst Conservative Outrage, please welcome Crooked producer Olivia Martinez.
What's up? First off, give it up for my co-producer, Haley, holding it down in the booth. Haley rocks. I realize we have some first-time players, I think, to the Take Appreciators. This is where we appreciate takes like fine wine. And this is our like beefed-up edition where we admire some of the best of the year. So we're picking who has the best, most artful take. And I'm here to present the nominees for this year's Worst Conservative Outrage. All right, your first nominee is Stupid Son of a Bitch. During a press conference, President Biden was caught on a hot mic calling Fox News reporter Peter Ducey a stupid son of a bitch. Although Biden called Ducey personally to apologize and Ducey himself was not offended, that did not stop conservative media from clutching their pearls. Meghan McCain tweeted, "This is no better than how the Trump administration treated the press, and it's gross." Does anyone remember what Tucker Carlson said about this?
No.
No.
He called Biden a nasty old man. Any reactions to that?
Most of that sentence is hard to argue with.
All right, your next nominee is Black Little Mermaid.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Disney released the trailer of its new live-action Little Mermaid starring Halle Bailey as Ariel. It prompted a lot of sweet videos on TikTok of parents showing their kids the trailer, but Daily Wire host and transphobic troll Matt Walsh had a different take, claiming a black mermaid just wasn't scientifically accurate.
Wow.
Here's his full quote. "With The Little Mermaid, can we just mention that from a scientific perspective, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have someone with darker skin who lives deep in the ocean. If anything, not only should the Little Mermaid be pale, she should actually be translucent."
Wow.
What?
Wow.
I just think it's cool that they would rather the Little Mermaid be played by a fucking invisible clear monster
than a black
person.
A lot of people reminded him that black fish exist in the ocean. Like, scientifically, it is very accurate.
I have to say, I don't...
Tough for you to get to that point.
I just think that, like, if you're on Twitter tweeting, stop erasing black fish, you've already lost.
Guilty. All right.
In a sense.
Your next nominee is litter boxes in schools.
Oh, yeah.
During a random October luncheon with voters, Representative Lauren Boebert randomly claimed that teachers are putting litter boxes in schools for people who identify as cats. Scott Jensen, who ran for governor of Minnesota and lost, added that litter boxes were for kids who, quote, identify as a furry. These claims were echoed by over 20 Republican candidates or elected officials this year, with many calling it a growing crisis, and it even reached an episode of Joe Rogan with Tulsi Gabbard. However, an NBC investigation found that every accused school was not, in fact, providing litter boxes to little furries. Any reaction?
That's a fun couple of calls that reporter had to make.
It's a lot like what my job is here. All right, your final nominee is Drag Queen Story Hour. The Republican campaign against the LGBTQ community took a turn this year when videos of all-age drag queen story hours went viral, prompting Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to call it child endangerment and five Proud Boys to storm a story hour in San Lorenzo, California. Carrie Lake and Libs of TikTok also claim that drag queens groom children, but do you want to know the kicker? Does anyone remember the kicker to the story?
I'm afraid.
A drag queen came forward to say she performed at Carrie Lake's house for her birthday party and there were children present.
I forgot about that.
Those are your four nominees for the best moments of conservative outrage this year.
I just want to say a couple things. One, Olivia, you delivered that brilliantly.
Thank you.
Two, I think we should take a video recording of what you just said and put in a time capsule to completely understand this era in American politics.
Yeah.
I think we should separate out the first couple are silly and dispensed with. I feel like we have to split out the ongoing effort to attack drag shows, because I feel like that doesn't have the essence of the pundi, which is for outrageous thing that can be like tamped down, because, you know,
it's just bigotry.
It's just
pure
bigotry.
Dangerous bigotry. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was gonna say, if you're going with pure impact and like how big of a deal it is that this conservative outrage was so bad, you definitely go with the drag queen story.
But if we're judging this on the
pure ridiculousness of the take, I have to go with Black Little Mermaid, just because there's nothing more
tough.
Ridiculous than that.
For sure. If we are appreciating the take in the vein of Take Appreciator,
right,
then it's gotta be Black Little Mermaid.
I think it has to be Black Little Mermaid.
All right, we have consensus.
Yeah.
Shout out to Black Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Black Little Mermaid.
That's tough.
Thanks, Olivia.
Thank you, Olivia. And thank you, Travell and Priyanka, for joining us. When we come back, we'll talk to Congresswoman Katie Porter. Joining us now is one of my favorite members of Congress, even though she's made it quite clear that her favorite Parrot Save America host is not me. The newly reelected representative from California's 47th district, Katie Porter. Okay, so you're a progressive who just won one of the country's most competitive House races for the third time in a row, this time by just 9,000 votes out of more than 250,000 votes cast. What lessons did you learn from this last campaign? What worked? What didn't? What surprised you?
Well, I think the most important lesson is that you have to do the work. You can have a lot of money, you can have a lot of good ideas, but you have to build the team and do the work on the ground. You have to knock the doors. You have to have the conversations. You have to be present in your community. I think one of our biggest challenges in this race was that 70% of the voters were new. I don't currently represent them. And yet at the end of the day, we outperformed every other Democrat on the ballot, including people who had been incumbents and statewide. So I'm really proud of our outcome.
I saw that House Democrats decided to create a new position of battleground leadership representative so that future candidates in tough districts like yours have a voice in leadership. What do you think about that?
It's a terrific idea. I supported it. We elected Abigail Spanberger, my colleague from Virginia, to serve in that role. I think it's really, really important. We need to hear from the entirety of the Democratic caucus. And let's face it, being a candidate in a competitive district takes a lot of time. I just explained, you got to do the work. That means you have to, you know, connect with the community. You have to fundraise. You have to do the things about being a candidate. What this means is you don't always get included or invited to be at the leadership table about what bills we're bringing to the floor, about what issues we're prioritizing. Yet that's exactly the people who are on the front lines, who are having these conversations. We know exactly what the American people need, what they want, what's going to take for us to deliver for them and win future elections.
I like the idea that the battleground representative at these meetings shows up and everybody else is in like suits and ties and fancy clothes. And the battleground representative is just like bleeding from them, covered in dirt.
Eye black.
Like, you don't know what it's fucking like out there.
Well, if you know Abigail Spanberger, that's pretty much her vibe. I'm all there for it. I am rock or die with Abigail Spanberger. You know, she was in the CIA. She is a train killer. And absolutely think that we need some of that perspective in Washington. Look, when Congress takes a district work period and people go home, if you're in a battleground seat like me, you are on the next plane out of Washington and the very next, even sometimes the same day, the next day you're out, you're in your community, you're connecting with people, you're learning about businesses, you're shaking hands, you're listening, you're teaching. And some of our other colleagues don't, they stay in Washington. They don't have competitive races. And we see this right now with our committee chairs. The typical person who's a committee chair in the Democratic caucus is 73 years old and won their district by 36 points. 36 points. And so those are the people who are drafting the bills and making decisions about what issues get heard, what hearings get held, what bills get moved on the floor. We need the voices of the entire caucus, including those of us in tough battleground seats.
Well, let me ask you, you know, there's been this debate about like, why did Democrats do better than expected in these midterms? Was it Republican extremism? Was it Dobbs? Was it democracy? You know, you were in a battleground district.
Yes, and yes.
You thought all of the above?
All those things played a role. But let's be clear, we overperformed in some areas where we've traditionally had challenges. And I think that things like Dobbs and extremism were a big part of that. In some states, particularly blue states, New York, California being two prime examples, we underperformed. And so I think some of that reflects that we need to make sure that we have messages that work in every part and pocket of the country where we're running. And so I talked every single day on my campaign about inflation and about the economy, because it was on my mind as a parent, as a resident of Orange County, as a Californian. It was on my mind every time I walked into the grocery store, drove past a gas station, and I know it's on the mind of voters too. So I'm really proud of what we accomplished, but I also think there are lessons to learn about what we need to accomplish going forward. Democrats deliver on the economy. It's true. It's statistically, it's demonstrably true. So we should be talking about that each and every single opportunity, helping people understand that we not only stand for their civil rights, we also stand for economic prosperity and abundance.
Do you think Democrats did not talk enough about their accomplishments in the 2022 Congress?
You know, we always go back and forth about this, like we should talk more, we should toot our own horn, we should talk more about our accomplishments. I don't think it's a quantity problem. I think it's a quality problem. I'll just be honest. It doesn't do any good to put out tweets to your 37 followers about that you were one of 219 people to vote on a bill. That's not going to motivate anybody. I think it's finding an authentic voice in your community and for yourself where people are going to connect with you. When I told voters I wasn't going to take any bullshit from any big corporation that was cheating them, I had the credibility of my actions in Congress year after year behind that. And so I think it's the exact same thing when you hear someone like Alyssa Slotkin say that she understands the risk that our nation faces from foreign adversaries. You know, she's been there. She's done the work. She's done tours in Iraq. She understands that. And she's doing the work every day in Congress to keep our country safe. So I don't think it's talk about it more. I think it's talk about it in a way that is really genuine and effective and hits the biggest possible audience.
Given Elon Musk's interesting behavior over the last few months, that has been a reminder of how impactful these big social media platforms are and how lightly regulated they are. the fact that Republicans are going to control Congress next month means that the odds of sort of a progressive, aggressive legislative response to that is highly unlikely. Are there things you think the Biden administration could do to bring more scrutiny and more regulation to these social media platforms?
Absolutely. Look, we have treated for too long, we have treated these platforms as untouchable. And they're not. They're just companies. That's all they are. They're companies. They're just like any other company. And they're existing in a marketplace. In this case, it's not a marketplace for products. It's a marketplace for information. And if they are doing harm in a marketplace by disseminating false information, then we have the ability and the need to regulate them. And I think we've actually seen, I would argue, I agree with you about Democrats and Republicans, excuse me, about the how they're going to handle this. But to be clear, I don't think Democrats have really stepped up to the plate on this either. Hatred, Democrats talk a lot about how we stand against hatred. We stand with the LGBTQ plus community. We stand up for civil rights. That's where hatred spread today. It spread online. And you can't fight hatred. You can't fight anti-Semitism if you're not willing to push on regulating social media platforms to do better. Today, I had a hearing about attacks on the LGBTQ plus community, and we learned that calling someone a groomer, an LGBTQ person a groomer or a pedophile, violates Twitter's content policy. And yet, the Human Rights Campaign found over 500 of these posts that had over 72 million views. They picked the 100 highest, worst posts, asked Twitter to take them down under their own content policy, and one post came down.
And it wasn't the post of the CEO who accused his former staff of that exact behavior.
That's right. That's right. So I think, look, I mean, these are not, this is not government speech. We have to educate the American public about what free speech does and does not protect. And we have to understand that these companies wield incredible influence in the marketplace for information. And when people have information or when they don't, dramatically affects the foundational pillars of our society and our economy.
Before we let you go, please rank these movies. You've Got Mail, Notting Hill, and Love Actually. There is a correct answer.
I think Love Actually.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. the correct order is Love Actually at number 3, followed by You Got Mail. Number 1 is Notting Hill. It is the number 1, unfortunately. But that's okay. That's okay. Congresswoman Katie Porter, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We really enjoy what's likely to be your last interview on this podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Okay, it's time for our next pundy. This is worst take by a Pod Save America host.
Wow.
We're making our head producer, Andy Gardner-Bernstein, present this one because we know it will make her deeply uncomfortable.
Yep.
Andy, take it away.
Yes, I drew the short straw. And so I'm going to be reading back some of your takes. And we're going to start with Dan.
It's exciting.
Stand by it.
And I would just like to point out that Elijah is the one who picked these.
Sure.
That's okay. Not what Elijah says. Yeah,
safely in North Carolina.
On July 19th, Dan wrote in a message box post.
Ooh. Wow.
Of course I knew Joe Manchin would once again torpedo the last best chance at climate legislation. Joe Manchin then threw that back in Dan's face and immediately signed on to the IRA.
So my plan worked.
Nice.
And Elijah's note on this is, quote, "Look, Dan went on a heater this year. This was the best we could find. We went through every tweet and every message box. He was cautious in his political analysis, adequately depressed about his sports teams, and self-deprecating about his pop culture habits. Enjoy it while it lasts, Dan."
Wow.
Thank you, Elijah.
Wow, I left no openings. We're so fucked.
You made it really hard. This one was tough for us. Okay.
Yeah.
Next one.
I podcast like nobody's watching. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you just wait. Okay. So next one is Jon Favreau. On November 1st, Jon wrote, quote, "I'm tweeting about this absolute nonsense against my better judgment because I'm seeing it rub off on way too many smart people. This was in response to a Will Stancil thread about how Democrats weren't going on defense enough in the final days of the election. John disagreed and wrote, "Most Democratic ads and speeches are currently about GOP extremism and abortion." But the next day, President Biden went out and gave a speech condemning GOP extremism, a complete coincidence that happened to validate Will Stancil's point and ultimately forced John to re-engage with his own thread.
Wow.
My take is great.
Wow. He hates how that was framed.
Biden and Stancil versus Favreau.
I said most ads were about GOP extremism. That's correct.
But once again, the producers realized that this was a bit of a stretch. But we looked.
So this is a segment where Dan and John were right all year, and now you're going to fucking kick the shit out of me? All right, go to the all next right. one.
Look, Tommy's not here.
Tommy's not here.
I hope we got a Tommy take.
On to Love It. We identified a few.
Yeah. Great. Let's go out with
yes.
it.
Yes.
We've got Love It saying that making coffee at home is weird. We have.
I just found out people do that.
We have Love It saying that LA has the best bagels.
That's true. I have to defend that. Oh.
We have Love It saying he wanted to fuck Madison Cawthorn a few times, I'm told.
No, I said it a few times. I figure I could just get it out of my system. Go on.
And finally, and by far the most audience requested take, Love It and Tommy for defending Elon Musk as a genius.
Oh no.
Here we go. Here's what I want to say about this. I relent. I am sorry. I have tried so hard to defend the proposition that this guy is not a fucking moron because I found it hard to believe that someone could have so much success in so many places and yet be as stupid as he seems to be. I give up. I relent. It is easy to make the first giant electric car company. It is easy to get to Mars. These things turned out to be simpler. Look, when Ben Carson ran for president, it turns out being a brain surgeon was easier than we thought. It turns out getting to Mars is easier than we thought. That's cool. That should give us optimism. I tried so hard to make a case for keeping my fucking Tesla. If anybody wants a discount on that Nazi sled, you can slide into my DMs. I'm out. I'm just out on the guy. I'm out on the whole fucking thing. All right. I relent. You win. You win. I will say, LA does have the best bagels, and Madison Cawthorn's not in Congress anymore. There's no power. The allure is gone. Now he's just an asshole from wherever he's from.
The good news is you just won a pundy.
Hey!
Is there a list of Tommy takes we could have?
Do we have any Tommy takes?
No, there are no Tommy takes. We're so sorry.
All right.
Bummer.
Okay. I win.
Yep.
All right. When we come back, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay. When we come back, we will share our 2023 New Year's resolutions. All right. We're back, and it's time at last for our New Year's resolutions. To kick things off, we asked some of our colleagues at Crooked for their resolutions. Take a listen.
I'm Caroline, senior producer at Crooked, and my 2023 resolution is to be less vain. Now, it is still 2022, which is why I'm wearing my sunglasses, because I'm not wearing makeup, and I'm not ready for you all to see what lies beneath, which is full gremlin. Also, if I'm being super honest, it's to drink less, but again, we are still in 2022, so gonna keep being vain, gonna keep drinking.
Hi everyone, this is Yasmin Hamadi from Dare We Say, and my 2023 New Year's resolution, also that's so weird that it's 2023, is probably going to be committing to the work that I want to do. So I have so many dreams, I have so many ideas, and I put them down on paper, but I don't ever really execute it. I think for 2023, I'm going to say, frick it, just do it, and don't look back. So yeah, happy New Year's.
Hey friends, Dr. Abdul El Sayed here, host of America Dissected, and my New Year's resolution is to finish the content I start. I have this habit where I start reading something, I'm like, you know what, I don't like this, so I stop. And maybe I might have missed something, so I actually just want to finish the things that I start.
My 2023 New Year's resolution is to defeat Jon Favreau in two takes and a fake. Jon is certainly a worthy opponent. He knows his takes, but iron sharpens iron, and I resolve to be better next year. I will also accept defeating Jon on aggregate in the case that he goes 2-1 in several rounds, but then goes 0-3 on a couple of rounds, which is a mathematical possibility. I will accept either of those outcomes, having completed my resolution.
My resolution this year is very easy. I'm going to learn line dancing. I think this would be fun. I think it will be cardio I can enjoy. And if you're nice, maybe I'll post some videos and we can all enjoy my line dancing.
Isn't the idea of line dancing that when you've shown up, you've learned it? Right? Don't they just, that's, you just do what they say, right? Do-si-do and so forth. Does it get harder than that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've never tried it.
I don't know anything about it. I just know from Miss Friedlander in elementary school.
All right. So before we share our 2023 resolutions, we are going to humiliate ourselves by playing tape from last year's resolution episode. We're going to start with Love It.
Okay, great.
Here's my sincere resolution, which obviously we all had a very hard couple of years, but I denied that I was actually depressed up until literally like three months ago. And right now, I finally understand how real that was, because I feel so much better right now, and I think that means that I'm being a better person. I feel better when I'm treating people better.
Hey.
And so my resolution for 2022 is to be very protective of this new situation and guard it and protect it with resilience, and I would like to keep doing
it. I think you did great.
That's great. That's
you did a great job.
Hey. Sure. We'll be saying the same thing that I said then.
Dan, you
fucking Dan. Unbelievable.
I think I also get my other resolution was to lose 15 pounds.
And that's a tough still.
I'll say that.
Didn't I have a fucking funny one we could have used? Jesus.
Anyway.
You've done well. I'll say
yeah,
done
I think
well.
We did
Glad
it.
We started
I think we
with
made
you.
It to, I yeah. think we made it to the end.
So what's your resolution now?
To get depressed. become insufferable. I want to start more books. I don't need to finish them.
No.
It's specific. I want to start more books because I feel like there's this pressure to fit. Abdul made this resolution about finishing more books. No. That's wrong. You should start. If you're not, it's like if you're making every flight, you're going to the airport too early. If you're finishing every book, you're not taking enough chances out there. I want to start stuff and just know that if I don't finish it, it's okay. You know, so I want to start more books.
Okay. Start more books.
Yeah.
Just like a couple pages. That's it.
No, just like, but like get into it. And if I guess the point I'm trying to make is I think people should be giving up on more books two chapters in.
Okay. All
because
right.
I think sometimes you start That's reading fine. A book, then you feel bad you're not finishing it, and then you're just watching Netflix. Start more books. Right. Give up. Give up out there. Give up on a keep reading.
This
but
is
give up.
I'm already looking forward to this being played back next year.
Me too. All right, it's Dan's turn. Let's hear Dan from last year.
My 2022 resolution was also my 2019 resolution, which is I'm going to get back into playing basketball, which is something I used to do four nights a week all the time. Got old, got injured, and I told myself, it was 2019, I was like, I am going to start playing again, which requires like rehabbing my ankles, getting ready. And I did that. And I finally got there in 2020. I played my first basketball game in the last week of February of 2020.
Oof.
Did you play basketball?
I did.
Wow. Okay.
I did it. I would also...
Perfect Dan.
I would like to say...
Yeah, unbroken streak.
That I really hope, if we go back and listen to it, that resolution came before, not after Lovitz.
I want to lead a fulfilling life. I want to play basketball.
Dan, what you got one for 2023?
In 2023, my resolution is to not mail in the New Year's resolution section of this podcast, which I do every year.
Yeah, we really do come up with them in real time.
Okay, well, that's it, huh?
That's it.
Well, you know what? The playback next year is not going to be as weird.
Yeah.
That's it. All right, here's mine. My resolution this year was going to be to get the fuck out of Los Angeles, because I have left this city twice in the past 2 years because of this pandemic. And so in 2022, I am getting out of here and I'm going other places. After nearly 2 years of a pandemic and a year and a half of being a parent, I feel like my friendships and relationships have atrophied a bit.
Yeah, that I feel that for me.
I don't even know you anymore.
I see you two every day. You guys are the exception. And Dan, I don't see in person, but
what have you been doing?
Feel pretty close. There's a lot of other friends and family members that I just have not spent a lot of time actually interacting with that I would like to do in 2022.
And if that applies to you,
tweet him.
Text him.
Yeah. Text him to say hi, and I may reply. Depends on how the tweets are looking. And then my final one, which is like Tommy's, which is a not thing, is that I pledge to not learn anything about NFTs or cryptocurrency.
Oh, all no, through I broke that one.
I don't want to learn a thing.
My other resolution is to get into crypto this year.
I'm going to be a crypto bro from San Francisco.
Try it out, something new.
You want to watch something rise, crest, and fall.
Right at the top.
And that's the time Dan gets on board.
Buy the dip.
I would say that a lot of people listened to that, took that seriously, and I was bombarded with crypto bros trying to get me involved in their endeavors.
Wow.
Well, and how'd it go? How many Sam Bankman-Fried texts do you have?
Let's just say next year I'll be recording this podcast from the Bahamas.
I nailed my resolution, except for the NFT crypto thing. I learned like an offline episode worth of that. That's all. I don't know anything
else.
Well,
that's a brief that arrives.
I barely know what happened with Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah.
All right. Resolution for me. You're going to roll your eyes. I'm going to volunteer more. And I know. But I feel like by saying it out loud like this, I'm going to be held accountable. And like, it's one of those things you always want to do. But like, I got to actually go out and do it on a regular basis.
If you have a nonprofit organization, a charity, whatever,
it's not
a
like donate either. You got to like show up.
If you need Jon Favreau's time, message him on social media. You can find him on Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, all the above.
And I'll do it here in LA. Now that I've left in 2022 and gone all the places I wanted to, I'll do it right here in LA.
If you need him, tooted him.
All right. Now that we did that, it's time for the final pundi of the night. And I think we have Elijah to present.
All right. Hey, guys. Can we revisit the Pod Save America host pundis real quick? Because I just want to say Tommy shouldn't be let off the hook.
Thank you.
We asked our audience for your worst takes. And it was always like Tommy and Lovett, Tommy and Lovett, Tommy and Lovett together. Like you guys, like. You had the cinder block boots on together for this one. You dove in
for sure
to that take together.
What were some of Tommy's? Can you give us a couple examples?
It was going to be we did the Elon thing together. It was a gruesome twosome on that one.
It was the overwhelming submitted thing too. So runaway, congratulations. Yeah.
Apparently, there's been several emails to the Hey account about it. I keep being told no one shows me them, but I find out about it. We're getting some. Getting some blowback at the Hey at Crooked account. Okay.
And on that note, let's move on to the overall worst take of the years. I am shaking with excitement because I had so much fun.
We can tell. We can see.
Heavy hitters only, big names, major news events. Let's go through in chronological order. First up, first nominee for worst take of the year, Donald Trump. In the days right before and right after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Donald Trump lavished praise on Vladimir Putin, calling him savvy, a genius, and saying that Putin is playing Joe Biden like a drum. The war thus far has not gone Putin's way.
It's good.
Any thoughts on that before we move on?
I mean, it's...
Yeah, I think you hit it. You got it.
Yeah. That was a bad take.
All right. Next up, Mark Thiessen. This flew under the radar when it came out. I was so excited when I found it. Mark Thiessen wrote a piece titled, "Watch Out, Democrats. The abortion ruling may help Republicans." Every line is amazing. I could just read the whole thing verbatim, but here's a small taste. Quote, "If the court's conservative majority does strike down Roe, Democrats might find that the decision is not nearly as unpopular as they think. If Democrats focus on defending abortion this November, it will backfire."
Okay, that's in pole position to me.
Yeah.
Bad take from
someone who gives a lot of bad takes.
It almost went into predictions, but this was the worst row take out there I could find. So a double talent. Next up, you guys are familiar with this one. David Brooks, after the FBI retrieved stolen classified documents from Mar-a-Lago, Brooks put out a piece titled, "Did the FBI just reelect Donald Trump?" The piece basically argues that this episode was good for Trump because there's a distrust of authority and the raid validated that. But the intro paragraph is the undisputed champion of the piece. Quote, why is Donald Trump so powerful? How did he come to dominate one of the two major parties and get himself elected president? Is it his hair, his waistline? No, it's his narratives. It's powerful stuff.
That was a very wrong take.
It was a wrong take.
Well, I mean,
it had some little. I mean, I don't think the FBI reelected Trump, but
he could still win.
I don't think it helped him in any way.
You don't know that yet.
We don't know.
Okay. It's not a bad take. It may just be an early take.
Early take. Yeah. Too early to call.
Too early to call. Too early to call from David Brooks.
Yeah.
Is that it? Those are the three.
No, I have two more. Okay. It's not a news event, but it's just a classic of the year to put it in. Bethany Mandel. If I had to pinpoint a moment that Republicans became the party of jerks, it's when Mitt Romney spent his entire campaign being accused of killing Big Bird, building finders full of women, torturing the family dog, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, before we go to the last one, there's a special kind of category of takes, which is it's your fault I'm this way.
Yeah.
That you see constantly, like, oh, Elon's become a maniac because of liberal scolds. Like, Republicans tried to burn down the Capitol because Mitt Romney faced an opponent. You know, like, there's just a category of, like, why do you make me do this to you?
I think I just discovered my 2023 New Year's resolution in this take, which is I am going to let the 2012 election go, and I'm going to rant about Mitt Romney less. Wow. I could feel it bubbling up inside me as that was happening.
It's going to make this tough, but
I'm going to do that.
Well, it's still 2022. So
how many books did you finish?
I mean, look, you're saying
check your volunteer hours at the end of the year.
That's first of all, Dan, really important and good point.
The question is how many books I started.
It's 2022 still. So before it's your Thunder Road, give us one last taste.
I would like you to know that. I know you every once in a while you remember we have a podcast on Thursdays, but we did this one.
What was your favorite part about Jennifer Tilly on Love It or Leave It? Keep going, Elijah.
You got Jennifer Tilly on Love It or Leave It? That's cool.
That's what happened.
And then last nominee, very simple one from Elon Musk. Comedy is now legal on Twitter.
Oof.
And those are your 2022 Worst Take of the Year nominees.
This is tough.
I will say that like just as a pure unadulterated bad take, claiming that overturning Roe v. Wade would be bad for Democrats, written by a foreign policy goofball from D.C. to me is the...
He's not even a foreign policy goofball. He's just a speechwriter.
Well, foreign policy.
You know,
speech,
I mean, look at our qualifications.
Well, he's like a foreign policy hawk goofball.
Yeah.
Torture apologist. Waterboarding us every week in the Washington Post op-ed page.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think that's the worst take.
I think it's Bethany Mandel.
You can't let go. This is Thunder Road.
Let's hear it, Dan. Yeah,
for those listening at home, it's December 14th.
Yeah.
All Mark Thiessen did in this case was make a bad political prediction, which many have done. Mm-hmm. Many people named Josh, as we learned in the previous subject.
Yeah, right.
But what you hit on the right point with Bethany Mandel was the worst takes are the ones that blame other people for why we are so terrible.
Yes.
And it is just such a convoluted, idiotic, ahistorical logic to say that the reason Republicans are assholes is because Obama ran a largely polite campaign against Mitt Romney a decade ago. It's an absurdity.
Yeah.
I'm willing to
We did accuse him of killing that guy with cancer, but
we did not do that. It was an unaffiliated super PAC.
It was famously unaffiliated super PAC, John. We all remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, I do think that, like, as far as like the category, as a category of takes, the look what you made me do take is pernicious and everywhere. So I'm persuaded. I'm persuaded by the message box.
I still think biggest issue of the year was abortion in the midterms. It was the biggest news story of the year, and Mark Thiessen got it as wrong as you can get it.
Well, I agree with John.
The thing
that's right.
I'll say about Thiessen, not to put my thumb on the scale here, but I wasn't just using some flowery language here when I said every line of that piece is a banger. Like, right, every it, single one is boring and wrong.
Give us another sentence.
Oh, you know, it just goes to all the trappings of Republicans, you know, are on the right side of history on this issue, and they're closer to the hearts of Americans than most people realize. And then all the, you know, crap that's unscientific.
It really just depends on what scale we're judging this on. If it's like just a bad, incorrect take, Mark Thiessen wins it. If it is, we are appreciating the take.
You're right. All right, let's call this fucking thing. It's not real. Bethany Mandel takes
Bethany
it.
Bethany Mandel.
Yeah. Congratulations to Bethany Mandel.
Whoever you may be.
You can pick your pundi up in North Carolina at Elijah's house, where he has been in this room nonstop for the last several months.
Great pundis. Thanks for participating. Great year.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Take Officer. All right, that's it for the show. Big thanks to Congresswoman Katie Porter, Travell Anderson, Priyanka Arabindi, and everyone here at Crooked and SiriusXM. If you can, make a donation to World Central Kitchen. Have a great rest of your holiday, and we'll see you back here in 2023. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. I'm still reeling from the footage of my fucking depression take. Let me out of my house. That was unbelievable. That was a person in crisis. Leave all this in.
Honestly, that was incredible. I'm so glad someone did that.
Jesus.
Good job, producers.
Wasn't there also a take in there? I'm going to watch more old films or something?
Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. The executive producer is Michael Martinez. Our senior producer is Andy Gardner-Bernstein. Our producers are Haley Muse and Olivia Martinez. It's mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis sound engineered the show. Thanks to Hallie Kiefer, Ari Schwartz, Sandy Gerard, Andy Taft, and Justine Howe for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Phoebe Bradford, Milo Kim, and Amelia Montu. Our episodes are uploaded as videos at youtube.com/podsaveamerica.